Welcome to the X-Corp Break Room, the podcast where a bunch of podcast creators talk about their other podcast. My name is Caleb, and there are some other people in the room with me, too.
I'm Vanessa. I'm here. Someone has to say something.
Wait, should I say I'm Len, I'm Dalmon, or should I just say I'm Len?
Len is here, Sam is here, Vanessa's here, Kate is here, Caleb's on the computer.
That's too much.
No.
I'm Kate, I'm also here.
Sam, present.
Hi, I'm Len.
Alrighty, I made sure to mark you all down for your attendance today.
Thank you, teacher.
Just like being at work for Caleb.
Yes, actually, I haven't filled out my attendance at all this week.
Wait, do you do attendance?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know. I just didn't know. That's a big responsibility for a
friend. So this episode, we're going to be talking about Arc 1, or Episodes 1 and 2, which I have a lot of mixed feelings about, because I really enjoyed this episode when it came out. I think it's the one I've reworked the most and like tweaked the most. But like listening back to it now after hearing the whole first season, I'm like, this is okay.
Really?
We do much better stuff later on.
I had basically the same reaction listening back. And that's kind of why Caleb asked us to listen back in preparation for this. And I knew that hearing it, I would just hear tiny changes that only I'm picking up on that I want to change knowing what I know now, like mix-wise and sound design-wise. All I'm hearing is things I wish I could have changed because I've heard it literally over 10 times. Like,
I had the complete opposite experience. When I first listened to it after it came out, not when it was like a pilot or like in pre-pro or whatever, when I first listened to it, I was like, this is good, but like I'm excited to get to the more kind of fantastical episodes. Like I felt that feeling of like I want to get to the meat of it and we don't have to explain the world, right? But then this time I was like, oh my gosh, this, I don't know, it was so entertaining and I thought it was so dramatic and like way more kind of tonally serious than I remember, but in a really nice way. I was really into it.
Yeah, I had a similar reaction of like, again, when I first listened, I was like, oh, but it's gonna get so much better. The stories are gonna get more exciting and like we can finally get over all the establishing the world stuff. But yeah, listening back, I really had a different appreciation for it in the exact same way, Sam.
Yeah.
I also only had time to listen to the first episode. I did not get to the second.
Boo.
I was so busy.
Vanessa didn't do the reading, everyone.
Jesus Christ.
It's the second one's much more fun than the first one, in my opinion.
I feel like the second one's more serious in my memory. Maybe I should have listened to it again. I was planning on it. I just had like a busy day at work.
What? Because we talked a lot about like the establishing the world. What parts, I guess, do you all think like comes across the most in these first episodes? Like, what do you think the first impression is based off of just like this arc?
Okay, I realize I said world, but I think I meant the characters, because we really get the sense that like Dalmont is so fixated on technical magic, Cameo is a lovable goof, and they have super different personalities. And it feels like that's established very well. And then like, I mean, obviously as the episodes go on, we kind of break that a little bit, but that was, yeah, we definitely did need to set that up.
Yeah. Listening back, and maybe this is just because it's something that I was very focused on and also like worked on a lot directly. It really sets up the tone, I think, very, very solidly through like the characters, the world. Like, I guess the tone is kind of the sum of all the parts. So it's a bit of a cop out of an answer. But like just the way everything comes together, I think, is probably what it sets up. And then what also stays the most consistent through the season. Like, I think that like, yeah, I think that like listening back, I did feel like it took maybe like 7 minutes to get to the full tone. But like, I don't know what we could have done in a minute to like convey the tone of what we've created. Like, so I think that's pretty efficient.
I was just gonna say, I think that the side characters do a lot to kind of set the tone, and just the overall comedic language of the podcast. That was something I noticed. I was listening in again, just how goofy a lot of them are.
Yeah. No, the very first episode specifically is like really stacked in terms of just like side characters and little moments.
But like Cameo Delmont, Miss Dubois, Leslie Riley, like all of the main ones are there.
Yeah, I think Miss Dubois did a lot for the town.
I want to, like, this might be a thing later we talk about, but like changes we made that were really good. One of my favorites, and this was a Caleb, was there were lines for Miss Dubois, and then like almost out of utility of not having to find someone, you were like, what if we do funny phone voice instead?
Yes.
And it's so much funnier than if she was like, dearie, like, could you please help me, dear Cameo?
Yeah, that would be too... I don't know. I'm also glad there wasn't an old lady voice.
Not even if it was that old lady voice?
It definitely would have been trying a little too hard. And like that first phone call scene got rewritten like 3 or 4 times, because it's really like the introduction to Cameo. It's like Cameo's first impression. So I spent a lot of time being like, okay, how do we communicate that this is the kind of person that, like, through good intentions and like just like really just unadulterated positivity, cannot be anywhere on time, doesn't really know how to focus or follow through on something that isn't like immediately in front of him.
Yeah. Something I remember specifically about this was the very first lines between the two of them, that I think it wasn't until like editing that it became what it was, because there's a really confusing phone tag that began it first. Still don't quite follow. Like, Cameo calls Delmont, but then acts as a, it confused me a lot. I didn't quite get it.
But it ended up being fixed, because I remember...
Yeah, we cut it.
Because I remember you coming over to my apartment and, like, complaining about it. And then I was just like, yeah, that makes no sense.
Yeah, I think it was like, Delmont thinks that it's Cameo, but it's actually Cameo's voice message, right? And then, like, calls back, and then, like... there's a butt dialing thing where like one of them calls the other person, and yeah. It was just like,
yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. It's like Cameo has a fake out voice message, and then Cameo butt dials back. And then you're like, you called me to Delmont once you finally pick it up after having called Delmont. And I was just like,
too many layers.
So what it was originally was that Delmont calls Cameo, but then Cameo like picks up just sort of like haphazardly by accident, and then it's just like in Cameo's pocket, which I guess doesn't make sense. But it didn't get cut in the edit. The day before we went to like print the first scripts, I like scrapped that whole opening chunk and rewrote it, because I could tell that no one liked it.
Yeah, I don't know when this was even introduced, but I also know originally that scene was conceived as like the first beat of the podcast too. And so I have to imagine that like part of the idea was like, this is kind of like a weird fake out way to start a podcast and like introduce that this is a very different kind of, you know, this isn't like found audio exactly, or kind of playing with the idea that maybe it is at first and then, you know, it's not, you know, it was different. I think it was different in context, not to give you a little bit of credit, because I appreciate going for a double fake out, you know?
Yeah, I did not mean to come for you. Throw it on that.
No, one. It was bad. I did get rid of it at the final hour.
Let's all go around and criticize each other's biggest flaw.
What's everyone's like least favorite part of what someone else did on the episode?
I do remember recording. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, get into the flaws. Roast me.
I vividly remember recording that fake out scene, and it was really fun. I could understand how it's something that would work if you could see it or if you could read it, but just hearing it.
Yeah, like if you could see little like sound lines coming out of Cameo's pocket, it hit. Mm-hmm. But you can't.
I still believe, like, it could have worked. Like, we could have made it work. It's just that would have been so much effort for so little payoff. And, like, that for the first beats of that pilot, like, your economy of attention is so tight, right? You have such a tight budget.
Yeah. And, like, we went through some changes even in the post of, like, because those first moments are really important. Because we added that Lola bit.
Mm-hmm.
The months before.
Yeah, something like that.
Has, like, the name Lola even been said in the podcast, though? Like, do people know who that is?
Yeah, she, like, introduces herself.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Well, it's probably worth it. Lola is the voice of the Experience Corporation at the beginning of the first episode.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then in season two, it turns out that it's doing a bit.
She's actually a shark.
Yeah.
Yeah, these are big spoilers.
Yeah.
What if the bonus content podcast is just all
spoilers?
Oops, all spoilers.
That would actually just be so
a spoiler funny. Episode.
Oh my god, no.
I think maybe it's because, like, it's something we created. I don't care too much about spoilers, but the idea of just, like, spending an entire hour talking about spoilers for something that we created sounds so miserably boring. Because it's just like, did you know that this thing happened? Yes.
Well, like, like, I was hanging out with Mark and Matt, who played a bunch of characters, including in season two, and they didn't know a bunch of these things. And it was, like, important subtext for something in, like, one of the scenes in episode 5 or something. Yeah, it was important subtext to, like, a scene that one of them was recording. And it was right before the last episode. It was, like, a speed. We needed to pick this up. And so they had been listening. And they were just like, what? They didn't see that coming at all. And they were, like, super hyped.
That's exciting. But no more spoilers, because I don't want to have to edit them out.
Yeah, I tried to do that one in a way that there were no actual spoilers in it for you.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, let's talk about spoilers for other popular media franchises. People really like that, right?
So, Game of Thrones. You all want to know who's on the Iron Throne, right? I'll save you 7 seasons.
It's Tony Soprano, right?
It is Tony Soprano. Yeah, and the duck. The duck from the first episode, from the pool.
Oh! Yo, that is the best part of the first episode of The Sopranos. Spoilers! Spoilers! There's a duck in the first episode of The Sopranos.
Multiple ducks.
I think it's in the first scene.
Yeah.
I think I'm pretty sure the first shot of The Sopranos is a duck.
That's a great question. What is, like, a good first episode or, like, a good pilot in your mind? Or maybe a really bad one, too.
Yeah, can I talk about, like, one that kind of doesn't work for me?
Yeah.
For a show that I adore, which is Futurama. The pilot of Futurama is really interesting to me because it does all this world building stuff that's really important, and it introduces the three core characters. So, like, it checks all those boxes, and it introduces the conceit, like, how we're gonna, what the Planetary Express business is, and, like, Planet Express, that's what they're called, and, like, who Leela is, Leela's backstory, Fry's backstory, Bender's backstory, how the world works, does all the stuff that's, like, really important to, like, pitch the show, right? But it kind of misses, like, to me, it misses a really essential part of what makes that show great, which is, like, the dynamic between the crew and the tone. Because I feel like the first episode of Futurama is really kind of, it's a little somber, almost. Like, it's very much about Fry running away from Leela for the entire episode. And then, like, that's just not important to the character dynamics throughout the rest of the show. This is a really interesting pilot to me. I remember watching it being like, I don't know if I'm going to like this show. And subsequently, the first 4 seasons are some of my favorite pieces of TV.
I feel the same way about a lot of my favorite shows' pilots. Because it's like, I feel like the best shows sometimes have bad pilots. Especially comedies.
It really feels like that pilot really, I can really feel how it's a pitch for the show, right? It's like, this is the premise, this is how it works, which is interesting because we did a similar thing internally with our show, but I feel like the final product of that first arc to me is, like, very in keeping with what the show is and what's important to the show.
Yeah, well, like, a lot of pilots are often produced well before the actual series, right?
Right.
In a way that then the tone can shift a lot, and sometimes really, like, and I'm sure Caleb has a lot to say about this, like, the second episode feels more like a pilot than the first to me at times, especially with something like Superstore, where clearly, like, there was a year or two between them in production. And so, like, with us, we did the pilot, we wrote everything, and then we were able to go back because of just the nature of how we were working and, like, shape it to actually fit the rest of the season.
Mm-hmm. I think the fact, too, that, like, we did an internal test of the first episode, right? I guess that's what we're calling it, like an audio test or something like that.
Yeah, we did a proof of concept there. Up until the commercial, I think, the first episode.
Yeah. And, like, I guess one thing that's really different about that is that we were kind of using that to sell to ourselves more than to, like, a production company, right? Which just means that it just was a very different process of what we were creating and why.
Yeah, because that didn't even end up on the Kickstarter. Like, right, that was just, like, let's test this
exactly.
out.
Yeah, this was before Kickstarter. And we sent it to a lot of our friends and people who volunteered to listen to it, which, if you're listening to this, thank you so much for that. Because I think we got a lot of really valuable feedback in that process.
Maybe that's something we could release as bonus content someday, but maybe that would be super embarrassing. If there's overwhelming interest, let us know.
Yeah, like, I don't know if... To me, it's like, if people are interested, that would be awesome. I wouldn't say I'm embarrassed of it. It's just like, I think it's just worse. Like, it's not terrible.
I did not know how to, I sound designed that thing in Ableton. Like, I didn't know what I was doing.
We also recorded it, like, on our, whatever microphone we had, which was, for me, was like my laptop.
Yeah.
But
I don't know, maybe that's charming.
Yeah.
Maybe we could do a listen back commentary all together.
With the chase scene specifically, because the chase scene was done once in the proof of concept, once for the Kickstarter, and then again in the actual episode. So the chase scene has been made by us at three separate occasions. So that could be like a fun little evolution.
Yeah, it could be fun. It could be fun for sure.
I was just going to ask Vanessa how it feels to redo the same scene three times for three different things.
So that one specifically, the thing that like comes back to me is the scoring on it, because when we did it the other two times, I really liked the track, but I hadn't established the rules I had around the score yet, which were like no drum set and like no real instruments actually of any kind. So like it is like a jazz piece with like a synthesized upright bass and a like that shit. And like, I liked it. It worked really well. It had a lot of momentum. I then tried to recreate that using my own system, my own rules. And it just like did not work. The specifics of why are because synthesized ride cymbals just don't work. They just don't work. If you know how to do them, let me know. So I then had to like write something new, which is now probably one of my favorite pieces of score. It's so fun. Because basically like the initial scene, it kind of just ended up like that one went through very little changes when I think about it. Like some of the lines maybe got tightened up a bit. The specific sounds I used in specific places maybe changed. Like the actors, of course, changed. But like the jokes and the function are all about the same, right?
Yeah, for the most part.
Yeah, I know Sam had a line that was like, I feel like a machine.
Oh, that's in there, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, we talked about that line.
I'm so happy it stayed.
Because, Sam, you didn't like that line.
And I still don't really like it.
Well, you sell it. We got there.
I'm really glad to hear it.
Yeah, it works.
I believe it.
Yeah, I had so much trouble delivering that in a way that I liked, but...
Well, I think in the final, we ended up I think I ended up doing some, like, dialogue chopping and tightening it up, and it's a little bit more, like, staccato and fast. Not the individual words, but, like, the lines themselves, I think, are a little different than how they're written to give it more momentum to match. I think I might be fully wrong on that. I know I did that throughout, but I think I, like, rearranged some lines and just, like, increased the momentum.
speaking of the chase, I think in the first episode, my most favorite part is that the sewer conversation, like the, we need to go in the sewer. No, I don't want to go in the sewer. Bit, cause I just
get in the hole, Delmont.
Yeah, it's a good scene. I like it a lot. Len, when we were getting in the studio at like, we had read a lot of scripts and we had been working on this script in particular for like a couple years at that point. What was it like playing Delmont in those early days? Like, what was going through your head?
I was freaking out. I was like, this thing that's been in the works for years that we got funded and then we got the space and we made it into the booth. And now it's the pressure's on. I think especially because it was the first episode, too, of like being able to hook people and making sure the character came across really well. And also knowing like things like the chase scene and like some of the fear that happened in kind of like the second half of the arc, like that stuff acting wise is a little harder to do. So I definitely, and I think also that's for me what made the first time listening through these first two episodes when they first came out, that was like what I thought about the most was like my acting, and I was like, oh god, okay, it's gonna get better, hopefully everyone will just stick through it. But listening back, I'm like, okay, actually it wasn't so bad.
Yeah, I think your acting's good. I think you give Delmont right away. I think you did like level up throughout. Like, I think especially like there was one day where like on that day you showed up and you were like 2 to 3 points on a scale of 10 better than any other day, and then you just kind of carried that through the rest. Like, there's just one day you came and you're like, I'm actually fucking great now, and then you just kind of kept that going.
Yeah, and thankfully it works really well with Delmon's character progression too, of they're a little more reserved and then start to reveal themselves more as the show goes on. But yeah, it was I think part of what it was, too, is I just really enjoyed playing Delmont, I think, a lot more than I thought I would. And I was having so much fun with it that obviously was still very nervous, but I could kind of focus more on the fun part of it.
My worry all through development was that we have like the mean one and the nice one. And usually in most shows, the nice one is like the main one. And then it's like the angsty sidekick, the Spock character or something like that. And like in this first episode, I think you like there's so much sympathy for your situation as someone that's just stuck in like life, especially as like a bunch of people in their mid to late 20s. It's a very relatable spot to be. And it's something that I've definitely related more with as the series has gone on in like my personal life, like that feeling of being stuck.
Yeah, this comes up like later in the series. There's some bit that Delmont was going through. Can't remember what it was. And I was just like, God, this is like so exactly how I feel. Like, that's wild that's like that. I forgot that I had worked on it and helped form Delmont. And it's like, it's wild how like real to my experiences this is. And then I was like, oh, it's because some of these are my experiences in there.
No, because that's really like the core issue, especially in these first three episodes, because both arc one and the Bad Call Billy arc both sort of present Delmont with a like alternative path that have like different pros and different cons, and they're like appealing for different reasons. And in the first episode, we don't really get to see Delmont like choose a path. It's more like the option is forced because the only other option is letting some person get murdered by an evil laptop. And that's like not a good plan. So I just think it's really interesting how we sort of introduce Delmont's conflict. But there aren't any like super hard answers by the end of the second episode.
Yeah, and I really like that too, because it feels like it's such it feels like something Delmont struggles with. And again, to echo Vanessa, it's like, and you, Caleb, like, yeah, it really is something that I find reflects my own life a lot. And again, sometimes I'm surprised by how much it does, but it's Delmont very much has one dream in mind, and it has to be that dream or else like it, nothing's worthwhile. But then I think they kind of find themselves enjoying a few aspects of social experiencing and have also found through Top Pal a way to sort of practice technical magic in a way they might not if they were in the Techno Magic Pod. And it's sort of like these new opportunities are presenting themselves to Delmont, and suddenly they have to ask themselves, like, am I still going down the path I'm on, or am I going to kind of betray that decision and that commitment I've made to myself and do something else that's popped up? And I think that's kind of something that's established well in this episode, and they continue to struggle with, if that makes sense. That's at least how I've seen it, but...
Yeah, definitely. Especially like Delmont in this first episode, it's not like ever very clear, but in the very first scene, it's like orientation, and then it like jumps like a couple months, like sort of into the future, like maybe a month and a half, whatever. And from then on, there isn't as many sort of like big leaps in time. Oh, go ahead, please.
That's something I'm still, like, not sure, because I think we, like, talked about it, and we just kept kind of tabling it. I'm like, do experiences occur between the ones we hear?
I believe there are some, but some episodes are more back-to-back than others. Like, episodes 1 and episode 2 are, like, the following Monday or, like, whatever. Because there's like reference to it, right? Like Leslie's like, hey, you did a good job yesterday, kind of a vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense to me that there would be, but I also feel like it's kind of a question that we don't want to answer in the sense of it's not super relevant until it is, you know? Like,
yeah, it's not really relevant unless we want to, like, yeah. There's actually no, I can't really think of a time it'd be relevant.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if it came up for a joke or a storyline or something that all this off-screen stuff happened, that would be fine. But I also think, like, it's probably fair to assume that.
Yeah. In the first draft of the pilot, there was a lot of jokes that I had written that were like, oh, just like that time we did this thing, remember? But it was feeling very, like, Family Guy cutaway.
Because you love Family Guy so much.
Family Guy style cutaways, yes.
Famously work great in audio.
Famously work great everywhere. They're just so freaking funny.
They're just so funny.
I mean, the only thing we need to make it work is in Oh Look, We're Here.
Yes.
Oh Look, We're in the Family Guy style cutaway.
The only one that stayed is in the first episode.
Yeah. That's true. Gotta give it a shout out.
Yeah, so originally, and I was probably the one pushing hardest for this, is I really wanted a recurring bit of every time they get to a location for one of them to say, oh look, we're here, because it's so funny to me, because it's such a cop-out in an audio format.
I feel like Sam and I both have recorded so many oh look, we're here's. Mm-hmm. And then yeah, you're right, not this was probably the only one so far that's made it, right?
There might be one more.
I don't think there is.
Yeah, I think you're right, but I
think Caleb and Sam in the rewrite phase kind of killed them.
I like it though. I like that line in the first episode, because it's Delmont trying to avoid a conversation, right? So that works.
Well, there was just one table read where we all just thought it was like the funniest thing in the world.
And there's then, just no way anyone would even notice it.
Like, it's, yeah. Yeah. Like, it's funny. It's also specifically funny to me as a sound designer. So it's, yes, like, that's not a thing that many other people share that experience.
I still think it's funny. And it was always a very fun line to perform, because you could just say it as deadpan as you wanted. And it made it just funnier.
I wanted to know if everyone has a favorite moment of the first two. You said yours earlier, Caleb, which was the sewer. Well, maybe that was just the first one.
That was just the first one. Because I have a different favorite moment in part 2.
Yeah, I really love the train. There's like a recurring thing, kind of. It's kind of like the most recurring setting is trains and train stations. And the first one, it just like does it. It just like turned out right for me. The way the train like goes away into the cut and then comes back, and like the way the door closes, is just like the first time that like everything all came together the most. Like, I feel like by that point is when I, as a listener, was like, oh, I'm in this.
I think that probably my favorite aspect, or is it a moment like that, is all the Lola stuff, all the introduction to the Experience Corporation. I think I really took that for granted, honestly, as like we were writing it, because both the characters, that's their home base, and then also like as writers, that's kind of our main zone. But it just, especially re-listening to it recently, it just was really so like strange and funny and very like a very unique setting. That just really, you know, the show is called the Experience Corporation, right? So like that just really popped for me, the kind of just weirdness of this business. Yeah, just like it made me excited to like write more things about the Experience Corporation itself, you know. So that was my favorite part.
I still got to go with the chase scene. Honestly, I think it just moves so well. It's so much fun. You feel like a machine when you're, when you're listening to it. Yeah, it's incredible.
I really like the part where Cameo and Mark's character are talking about
yes,
like setting boundaries and all that. Yeah. It just makes me laugh.
That part, Mark's entire performance as number 27. Yeah.
Kills.
Yeah, because I don't know. I guess that's the second episode, and I have things in there that I maybe like more than the train. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I also really like when Delmon and Top Pal are kind of, when Top Pal is sort of beginning to reveal like their plan and that they're actually sentient, and kind of like how Delmon sort of begins to realize it as they're talking. I just really like how that scene also builds.
Yeah,
intermixed with all the.
I love how that one goes. That's probably my favorite score bit, maybe throughout the whole series, like the way the score underpins that, like Delmon could get everything they ever wanted 30 minutes into this series if they just chose to be kind of evil. You know, you could just get it all. And that's really, I think that could have been a narrative that I could have related to. But we were cowards.
There was definitely more evil in Delmon, as we had talked in the Q&A, which that sort of, that moral ambiguity, I think, is the thing that survived the best throughout the series. Is that
like
Delmon sort of,
yeah,
has their own code.
Yeah. Len and I also often joke that the two of us are the least moral of the five of us. Like,
yes,
Len and I both have like questionable morals, and we talk about that a lot.
Well,
yeah, we're willing to adjust the truth to a more fitting truth for us.
Yes.
I think, because I do enjoy all of these parts because I wrote them, but my very favoriteest part would be, because there's two scenes that I was convinced wouldn't work until like the very final cut. And the first scene we already talked about, which was the sort of Top Pal trying to court Delmon to come to the dark side. And then the second scene, which I wanted it to work so bad, and I think it does, is the weird like sort of slapsticky who's on first moment with number three, when there's like Delmon's trying to talk to Cameo and Cameo's talking
to Delmon.
Oh my god, that
is
Delmon,
so funny.
But number three thinks they're talking to, that Cameo's talking to them. That's just so funny to me.
Yeah, I think that also is a bit that makes full use of the limitations of audio. Like, I think that bit would actually be worse in visual.
I agree.
Yeah. And shout out to Morgan, who voiced
Killed
that goon. I thought he was so devious. Morgan Morse, you can find him, Morse Coda on TikTok. He just was so... Oh, he just was such a little rat. I don't know. I love that character.
I did too.
Yeah. Morgan really got, like, we've talked about this so many times, such a good actor. He also really just got, like, he's a lot in season two, just the funniest parts to act. Like, he got, he probably got the funniest ones to do, and he killed them. So
there's a specific character that we recorded so long ago, by the time we're editing the episode it'll probably be like a year later, and I'm just very excited to listen back.
Yeah, I feel like it also happened for me, like, not as much because I didn't write it, but like there were scenes because we'd meet throughout the production like once or twice a week, and so like the actors, they hadn't heard it since they recorded. Well, they've never heard it. They haven't done it since they recorded. And so you and I have like a much more intimate knowledge of what's going on. And then they listened once it's released, which is kind of funny. But there were like back and forths between us that were like, I don't know if this is going to, like, we had to work stuff out in post in a way that was like really fun, I feel like. Stressful, but like.
No, it was really fun. And like my favorite part of writing is like making things work, like fine tuning, rewriting, restructuring. Like I love the dilemma of like, okay, you know what you want to do. Now what's the most effective way to do it? And we did a lot of that, especially on these first three arcs, like when we were finding our groove.
Yeah, there'd be a bit where one of us would like be like, can we cut? And the other, it'd usually be something the other wants to keep and be like, what about this tweak to make it work? And then that would usually work.
Yeah. Which is like when in the Q&A when I talked about us like building up, like usually if we were going to cut something, unless it just like really didn't need to be there, we tried to save the like kernel of the idea that worked the best.
Yeah, for sure.
How does everyone feel about Top Pal as one of the like oldest, because like Top Pal was in my very first outline of like my very first episode that we made pre-pandemic. Like I'm pretty sure I'd outlined this episode that far in advance because I remember us reading through it at one of our very first meetings. Sorry, Sam, to bring up a memory you weren't there for.
Oh, I was like, why are you apologizing?
Yeah, Sam looks so confused. I think something interesting about Top Pal that a couple people have said to me is like the AI reading of the character, because AI has been so much more in the forefront culturally and narratively than it was 3-4 years ago. Four years ago now. Oh my God.
Very true. I've literally never thought of it like that.
And so like reading it as an artificial intelligence, because it's not, that's not the narrative. It's like not what he's written about. But it is a very valid reading, and it is a reading that works. I really find him interesting. I find it interesting that as a villain, he's not really doing, I mean, he's doing bad things, but the thing that he presents as a problem is what he makes our lead want to do, not what he is doing. And I find that to be a really cool function.
Other than stealing laptops.
Liberating laptops.
Yeah, liberating.
Oh, excuse me.
Oppressor.
Yeah, we always spoke about Top Pal as like using text-to-speech as the voice, not like using an AI voice. And you're right, that has been a big change that's happened.
Yeah, and like Hobart, the actor who did Top Pal, killed it. Like the way he performed, and then the way in post the production like brought the voice to being a very uncanny but functional way. And also like shout out Hobart for catching F's in the edit while recording, him being like, there's an F.
there was so many F's that we had to delete both in post, during recording, and in writing. At every stage,
yeah,
we were removing F's from Top Pal dialogue.
F watch.
And like I still, if the like listeners have picked up on this bit of meaning of the missing F key, you do press F to pay respects, and Cameo has no respect for Delmont, and so that's why Cameo's laptop is missing the F key.
Cameo has no respect for Delmont?
that's not true
at all.
This is my headcanon. You can all shut up.
All right.
I think this is irrelevant.
But tell us.
But for so long, we Top Pal's name was Taplop.
I forgot about that. That was a good change.
Yeah, and I like kept calling him Taplop on accident for a long time.
Taplop. Oh my goodness.
It's so funny because the idea was almost there and we didn't notice that it was just shifting the vowels.
The other like thing with like Top Pal, the name, is that like he picked it and he didn't pick it as an anagram for laptop. He was like, which I think in the earlier episodes there was more sympathy for Top Pal. Because he really just wants a friend and like someone who's on his level of existence, but he's one of a kind, so there isn't anyone.
Yeah, I really still sympathize with that laptop. No, I feel for Top Pal. I also like, I think that like a couple ones and like episodes I had like cut, I was really fascinated by arcs that resolve themselves in stupid ways. Like this one where they're just like, it just like stops itself by them being like, oh, we're not getting paid and all leaving. I just love that still.
We definitely had more of those in other episodes that did not stick. I'm glad that this one did.
Yeah. I would like to take this opportunity to talk about something I've wanted to say for so long about the sound design in this episode that I've talked about probably to each of you individually because it makes me so hype. I want to know if anyone has picked this up. Top Pal, in a couple of episodes or a couple of scenes, he gets when he starts to get very emotional, very heated, his little laptop fan turns on and just like going out of the way to add that little thing. Like there's little bits all over that just like I don't think people notice. They're just there for me. And that was like the first one where I was just like, I'm gonna go above and beyond because I want to and this is fun for me.
It really like, because I even catch myself hearing things that I didn't hear before, or like oftentimes when I'm listening through on Reaper, which like distorts the audio slightly to like bring out certain things. So yeah. Like when I'm listening back with my headphones, I'm like, oh my God, like there was this like little swell of score that I've never noticed before. Or like there's this little sound effect or line or whatever. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I think that when I think about, this is just going back to your original question a little bit, Kayla, about Top Pal. I think that in much of this first season, the way we present like villains and antagonists is kind of, we don't have like a lot of like big villainy villains, right? Whether or not you sympathize with Top Pal's, you know, reasons, like he has like a big monologue and he has henchmen and, you know, he's like a really classic villain. And I think that's really important to give the first episode really big stakes, right? Like Patricia is obviously the antagonist in the next episode and she's very villainous in her own way, but like I think that there's a kind of gravitas the Top Pal that's really important for the storytelling. I think it's really important that like it starts out at that high level of drama to propel the rest of the season.
You're right. I remember we spoke a lot about, is there a death in this episode? And I remember that was such a big discussion of like, no, they can't kill someone. Well, we can imply it, but like, no, we need to make sure everyone's okay. And yeah, that definitely would have, especially in like the first arc, would have set a very different tone.
Yeah, I don't know if I even really articulated this like when I was fighting for there not to be a death in the first episode, but like for me it was a matter of like I don't like Cameo can't be a killer. Like Cameo can't deal with.
Did you not read the backstory we sent you when you came onto this?
Oh, that's what you
this
meant
is the
by
twist
assassin.
I was talking about earlier that comes up in the second right. part. Yeah, that really yeah. surprised everyone.
I just thought Cameo ate a lot of cereal, like a cereal killer.
Yeah, exactly.
Like.
Same page. You really gotta learn how to spell, Vanessa.
I have a condition.
Yes, yes, we know.
You all didn't know.
I feel like I really didn't want Cameo to either deal with having killed someone, or even worse, not deal with having killed someone.
Also, it wasn't even like a death from the villains doing the death. Like, we would have had the protagonists we like kill someone, but the villains not.
Yeah, and I feel like the tone of our series is such that, like, just the fact that Morgan's goon is just really hurt, like, it doesn't feel like grim or macabre to me. I mean, if you think about it, it obviously is, but it feels very firmly in the like cartoon violence area, where like it feels okay. But I don't know, maybe some listeners are very disturbed by that sequence. I'm not sure.
What if the listeners all were like actually like upset and disturbed about this, and we just misread the tone so vehemently?
And maybe they've been expecting way more murder in this podcast, which...
What if they loved it?
What if
they loved it? They were like, yeah. So cool.
I know it's been 13 episodes and only that one little bit of violence, but I can smell.
Do you want to read my gore fic of the first episode of the Experience Corporation?
Is that a term?
I'm pretty sure if you Googled gore fic, you would get what you were looking for. Kate did a little head nod, like, as if to say, like, yeah, that checks out.
Yeah, Kate's the one who knows.
Kate's the one who knows. Kate's the one who knocks.
Yeah. Kate never knocks.
I nod.
Oh. I thought Caleb said knock.
I thought it was a Breaking Bad joke.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, well, it definitely was a Breaking Bad joke.
We know how you love Breaking Bad.
Once I was, like, sitting with my, like... I was sitting with someone at this like outdoor restaurant, and this guy I knew from this internship I was doing came up to me to like talk to me for a second. And he said like a few things, and then he was like, yeah, have you seen Breaking Bad? And I was like, yeah. And he was just like, well, I haven't. And then he just left.
And that guy would go on later to flip Caleb off at the train station.
They really do have a similar vibe.
Very similar vibe.
That's just like the, do you like Squidward? Someone answer. Do you like Squidward?
Yeah.
Well, you should watch SpongeBob because he's in it. Like,
that's
same
wild
energy.
If someone said that to me, I would be so angry. Like, I don't know,
like,
what it was, but rage just filled
thing
my
I've
body.
Ever seen. It was also like a screenshot of a Tinder conversation. And I was like, this is the funniest shit. If someone said that to me, I'd be like, anything you want from me.
Oh my God.
Yeah, same.
Oh my God.
Really?
It is a good line.
Oh my God. It's so funny.
You should really. It's like the equivalent. It's the equivalent of, is your refrigerator running? Like,
exactly.
You better go
I
catch
said
it.
The same thing. And do you know how funny it was the first time I heard, is your refrigerator running?
Not funny.
I was 5. It was hilarious.
I also think it's funny.
I think it's funny, but not if it was happening to me.
I'm just now imagining like a prank call like that, like calling a random number. Like, hey, do you like Squidward?
Hey, that's a great bonus episode right there. Just bring back the,
you know, the prank phone call after I got arrested for one. Thanks for bringing that up, Len.
Thank you all so much for listening to episode 2 of the companion series to the Experience Corporation. It was obviously such a great time making the show. And it was really fun to reflect back on all the great memories. I'm sorry.
Aww.
I don't know. How is this going? Is it
good? I like
that's
it.
That's great. We'll
okay,
have faded.
Thank
by
you.
Then. We'll fade with the awe.
And also, please don't forget to join the Patreon. Wait, no.
They can only hear this if they're on.
Shoot.
Make your friends join the Patreon.
Don't share it unless, don't show anyone.
Thank you for being on the Patreon.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah, so great.
Oh, and let us know if you want to hear anything. Like, we're going to do more about these arcs. We have some things planned, but like, if there's something you're really itching to hear about, maybe we'll throw a little bone your way.
Yeah. If you ever want to send us a question directly or a suggestion for future bonus content, you can email us at theexperiencecorporation@readymadeutopia.com.
If you can type all that.
Hey-o! But yeah, thanks for listening, and then you all say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.